I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Listening is more powerful than speaking. Turning your ears into powerful tools to impact the actions of others. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. Also, after we get done with our program, if you want to go to our website and look at a new video we just put up, it gives a little bit of information on our services. Came out pretty well also. We have a few housekeeping items, then we'll jump right onto our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. And if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Tom Drucker, who is a longtime friend and business colleague and a very cool guy on top of it. Takes amazing pictures, loves to take pictures of wildlife from all over the world. Tom's work focuses on helping leaders achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the human yet often seen obstacles that get in their way. I've seen Tom's work with individuals and groups to help them achieve remarkable results. Tom has degrees in both psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impacts on their businesses and, most importantly, on the hearts and minds of the people that he works with. Tom has worked with companies domestically and globally, and I still don't know how he does this. He has this magic of somehow being able to communicate with people across all language barriers, and they get it. And today, when we talk about this topic, if you listen carefully to what Tom's sharing, you too will be able to share information with your team in ways they will get it. I feel privileged to have Tom with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be how to turn fear and stress into strengths. Tom, I want to welcome you, and thanks for being back on Open Line.
It's a pleasure, Dana. Thank you very much for that warm and generous introduction. I want to also welcome all of you who are on the Open Line webinar. Our purpose of our dialogue today, and certainly my purpose in conducting this conversation, is to enhance your capability to use the natural skill that we all have, the natural capability that we all have, maybe not necessarily consciously using it as a skill, but making it more of a skill as a result of our dialogue today. So that your ability to listen will actually impact your relationships and your results. I want to remind you of some fundamental and universal ideas about listening and suggest a new method of listening for you to use in your professional and personal life. And one thing I can say right off the bat is there's a little bit of an irony in this first slide, because it's right now a one-way conversation, except there actually is a dialogue going on. See in the next slide that one of the fundamentals of listening is it's a constant presence in our lives. We receive thousands and thousands of verbal and nonverbal messages all the time. And the dialogue I mentioned is a result of what's going on inside you. Because as I'm talking, each of you not only is listening, but you're having a reaction. You're talking to yourselves. And we always do that. Sometimes we're aware of it more consciously than other times. But this process of consciously and unconsciously automatically listening and filtering and reflecting on what we hear is a way that shapes our reality. And one of the powerful components of our human experience is to be able to be more intentional about this process rather than just allowing it to be automatic. So today is a dialogue, even though I'm going to do the talking for now. I have embedded in this experience a visual metaphor that will hopefully give you access to the auditory and listening-based experience that we're trying to reference, and we'll come to that a little bit later on. And hopefully just by alerting you to the process of the way listening impacts our thoughts, our experiences, and obviously our speaking, you will become more powerful, effective, and relaxed in the way in which you use your interactions with people to impact constructively the results that you are achieving and want to achieve around you, and also the personal relationships you have with close friends and family members. I'm privileged to teach leaders. As Dana said, not only do I do strategy work, but I coach individuals, I coach teams, and I do leadership trainings. And I can't tell you the number of times that people have come up to me and said, boy, you know, the first place I applied this was with my teenage son or daughter or my spouse or my brother. And I encourage you to look at these principles and practices as universal and hopefully helpful. So everyone's perception is their reality, and the good news and the bad news is this condition, this phenomena of perception, creates many opportunities for biases. And by bias, I don't mean negative biases necessarily. I just mean that the opportunities, the amount of variety, the amount of opportunity to see things in new ways is often reduced, just because if every time we left a room, we would have to remember what a door is and how to use it, we would be paralyzed. We would not be able to function. So the way the mind works is we look at life through our experience, and we use that experience in a conscious and unconscious way to navigate our lives. And it's the ability to do that that gives us our mastery over our circumstances. However, we can also be trapped by that. And that's one of the purposes of our conversation today, is to give you some examples of things that you might do. And I like to say this because I don't want anyone to take a message here that, oh my God, I've got to constantly be alert, awake, and aware to the way that I'm processing information. It really is important to notice that the natural phenomena that we all use in listening and speaking, again, allows us to be effective and to master the circumstances that challenge us. However, when it counts, when it's important, when there's unplanned challenges or circumstances that we face, when things aren't going as well as we'd like, or we think we can do better, or the people around us need our help, that's when the ability to be more intentional and aware of our listening patterns becomes really, really useful. So listening is an automatic process of filtering, and often, and this is very interesting, I think, for most of us to be aware of, because of the way our brains are constructed, we have a built-in judgmental filter, agree, disagree, good, bad. It comes from our what's called the old brain, the fight or flight response. It comes from the nature of the way we are trained as human beings, as little children. There is a natural tendency to filter things through a process that is here on the screen, agree, disagree, good, bad, understand, don't understand, oh yeah, I heard that before, oh, this is like that. We tend to look for things that are conforming and consistent with our experience. Again, that's the way we allow and generate effectiveness. However, it isn't a perfect world, and there are times when this automatic filtering process is not effective. It gets in the way. for instance, sometimes new ideas. Tough to get through that automatic filtering process. Linguistic experts call this phenomenon a narrative rut, a term I've recently come to appreciate both for its kind of obvious meaning and its unusual formulation. So I hope you'll enjoy the word. It's a technical term. But what it means is that we have patterns, stories, if you will, that we tell ourselves. They overlay our experiences about people, even people that we've just met for the first time. We're introduced to someone, and someone says, Sally is a lawyer. And we say, oh, yeah, to ourselves, unconsciously often. Oh, yeah, I know what lawyers are like. Oh, and what kind of lawyer? Well, she's a litigator. Oh, a female litigator. That's interesting. So we do this in a way that is automatic and mostly unexamined. And then when that individual that we encounter shows up differently than our historical perspective or narrative rut, sometimes it is a little bit challenging for us to make that connection with the person who's actually in front of us, or the person we're listening to on the phone, or the team that we're beginning to work with, because we are faced with new people, and sometimes we have reactions to new people. We turn them into people we've known who they're like in our experience. And sometimes that's done with visual cues. Often it's what they do and how they speak. So the automatic filtering process can be impacted, however, by our awareness and intention. So this is the thing I promised you that we'd have some fun with and practice. So I'm going to show you a picture in a minute, and I'm going to tell you, I would virtually bet you whatever, you know, $100 or $1,000, that all of you have seen this picture before. It's a classic picture. You've seen it in airplane magazines. You've seen it in textbooks. And my purpose in showing it to you is not to show you a new picture. My purpose in showing it to you is to show you a picture that allows you to use a certain kind of awareness. And here's the picture. And notice how you can switch between seeing the young and the old woman. And I'm just going to give you a few minutes to look at that. If you're in a room with other people, feel free to say, oh yeah, I see the old woman, I see the young woman, or I see both of them, or I have no idea what you're talking about. This is the challenge of a one-way dialogue, and of course, in a little while, we're going to stop the recording and open this up to questions, and hopefully that'll make it more of a dialogue. And as Dana said, if you have questions to send in, feel free to type them out, and Dana will share them.
Yeah, actually, Tom, we do have a question that came in.
Great.
I can only see the young woman, even though I understand I'm supposed to see something else. What do I do?
Okay, so I'm going to give all of you a tip or a trick. First of all, let me just say to that person and to others who may be experiencing the same thing, this is normal. I have a colleague that works in my office, and we were putting these slides together, and he said the same thing to me. He said, Tom, I've seen this picture 100 times. I know what I'm supposed to see, but I can only see the young woman. So that is a normal response. And I just changed the slides, the same picture, but I'm going to ask those of you to think about this question, what capacity are you using to switch between seeing each image, and now I'm going to give you the trick. So if you're in front of a computer as opposed to projected onto a screen, put your hand on top of the picture and keep moving it down until it's just above what you might think of as the ear in the picture.
Oh, how clever.
And what you will see is a fairly large nose, a mouth, and what might be a fur coat or a fur collar in an older woman. And then when you move your hand away, presumably you will see the young woman. You can certainly put your hand on the lower part of the image, and you'll see a young woman in profile. You'll see her ear, you'll see her eyelashes, you'll see her dark hair, or a hat with a feather coming off of it. And I'm using this again as a metaphor, we're going to come back to listening in a moment, but I want you to, if you will, get familiar, practice in other words, intentionally toggle your awareness between seeing the old woman and the young woman without using your hand to mask it. Just give you a few more seconds to practice that.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? And the question that I want us to engage with is how you strengthen this capacity in yourself. And in thinking about that, the shift from automatic to what we're going to be talking about as intentional listening uses the same quote-unquote muscle as shifting between seeing the old and the young woman. Because what we're doing is we're bringing intentionality to our perception. We're interrupting the automatic tendency we have to see what we see based on our history or our past experiences or our cultural upbringing or who knows what. So when we see the picture, very often, even if we, as the person who shared with you the question, Dana, says, I know what I'm supposed to see, but I still can't see it, sometimes we have to help ourselves with this hand masking, either the top or the bottom. I was doing this with a group of investment bankers not too long ago, and we were in a conference room projecting this image on a big screen with none of the text around, just the image. And I said, what do you see? And these people were in their 20s and 30s. They could not see the old woman. And when I pointed out the old woman, you could tell they were sort of this reaction because they were used to and sort of, you know, conditioned to see a young woman. So we have many patterns and circumstances that impede our ability to experience the reality that's in front of us and that we hear. So moving from the visual metaphor to our topic today of listening, I want to just talk for a couple minutes about the process of listening. And again, these are the tips and ideas that I hope will forever enhance your abilities to use your ears and your heart and your head in ways that deepen your ability to connect with people and have relationships that really are effective and produce the kind of results that you want in your life and in your work. So one example of an intentional type of listening that most people probably have have heard and used is called active listening. And most of us know that that refers to letting the other person know that you've heard what they've said by repeating their main points or in some way giving them back, oh yeah, Fred or Sally, what you're saying is this. And active listening, it's been around, God, for decades and decades. It's been called active listening ever since I was in, I think, certainly college is when I first encountered it, not graduate school, but college. As Dana knows, I had the opportunity of studying early in my career, still as an undergraduate, with some of the early pioneers of applying the principles of positive psychology to the workplace. And so I was studying with people like Abraham Maslow and Carl Rogers. And Carl Rogers' approach to his work was called client-centered therapy, and then he began to apply that to business. And he certainly is one of the people to reinforce this term of active listening. It's a useful communication tool. It's effective in some circumstances. It is also often transparent or obvious when used as a technique. So let me give you an example. I was coaching a CEO and his chief technology officer yesterday, and they were having some conflicts. And one of them said to the other some version of what had just been said, and the other person said, don't try that technique on me. So it was, and we were all sitting in a room, and I kind of laughed to break the ice, and I said, so what you're saying is you're kind of frustrated that what he's doing is telling you the content of what was being said, but missing your underlying frustration and resentment. And he said, yes. So, again, listening is not just about the content. Listening actively is very helpful, particularly in situations where there is some conflict and the facts in question are being experienced differently. So the person using active listening effectively might say something like, so let me make sure I'm hearing what you're saying. You're saying that you saw Sam and Sally wasting some time as opposed to working. And you think what you saw indicated that they were kind of, you know, goofing off. And the other person would say, yes, that's what I said I saw. So active listening is useful for facts when facts are in dispute. Active listening is useful as a communication tool when there needs to be a kind of fact-based conversation and people need to know that what they've said has been heard at a level of fact. But because it's so widespread and so common, if it's used in an artificial way, a way that feels kind of formulaic, it can actually backfire in terms of forging a common bond where issues, problems, conflicts, and challenges can be solved. So active listening, a very useful form of intentional listening, but it needs to be used in the right setting and the right way. We're going to talk now about another kind of intentional listening.
So Tom, somebody wrote a question, and I think you answered it, I think. So it could be interpreted as being condescending if it's done wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
Condescending and manipulative.
Okay.
So I often work with family businesses. And so very often, patriarch or matriarch will be having some conflict with a son or a daughter. And very often the younger person who may have studied this in communication class at school, or I'm thinking one person who's actually a psychologist, was using this technique with their parents. And the father said, don't give me any of that psychological bullshit. Sorry for the phrase. You know, because it was like done in a way that was just stating back what the person had said, but stripped away of the background context, meaning, and feeling. So again, it's useful if, like for instance, there was a production environment I was working in last month, and there was some question about a quality standard being adhered to, and there was some question about the way it was being measured. And so one person who was being challenged said, listen, let me go through the metrics and the way I calculated this. And he went through them very precisely and very much in detail. That worked because what the person did using a whiteboard and the specifics of the measurement is he said to the team, this is the way I did it. You can argue with the results, you can argue with the interpretation, but I just want us to be clear on how the metric was used and how the quality standard was calculated. That was a very effective way of using active listening, because it was feeding back to the audience that was in, all over the place, kind of what the facts were. So if you frame an active listening, listen, I'm going to say back what you said because I want to make sure I heard it. When you telegraph that this is a technique and that you're doing it for the purpose of kind of laying a foundation of commonality, it's fine. In fact, in that family situation, I said to the son, I said, what you're doing, I think, is you want to make sure that your parents know what you see are the facts of the matter. You're not trying to manipulate them into agreeing with you. And he said, right. And that helped a bit. So if you telegraph that this is a tool, if you telegraph this is a technique, and you say, listen, I just want to actively, consciously, specifically say back what I heard because I'm upset, you're upset, you can feel the tension in the room. Let's just see if we can take it down a notch and start with the basics of what I heard, and then maybe we'll reverse it and you can tell me what you heard me say, and we can even make some notes, kind of agree that this is the thing we're in dispute about, and then see what we want to do. Anything you can do to use your listening skills to actively reflect the facts, quote-unquote, that have been offered, or the very raw data without going into, and therefore you should agree with me kind of mode, works. And that's really the value of something like active listening. Beyond that kind of technique of active listening, we have the ability to recreate another person's experience so they feel truly understood and appreciated. This is one of the messages I wanted to bring to you today. Because this form of listening, which engages the head and the heart, this form of listening, which gives you an ability to recreate another person's experience, is much more powerful. It also should be done in a compassionate and a thoughtful way, not like a technique. It should be done in a way that telegraphs to the other person that you're intentionally putting out effort to really not just listen to what the person said, but put yourself in their shoes, to inhabit their point of view, as it says here, to listen to how they're feeling and what they feel, and to see the world from their perspective. By saying to people, that's what you want to do, or to say to them, that's what you've done, and, you know, check me out on this, it shows a willingness to broaden your perspective to include theirs without avoiding or abandoning your point of view or your concerns. It's listening and then speaking to recreate another person's experience in a way that is truly giving them back the feeling that they're communicating, not just the facts. So, I was with, I guess I'd call him the number two person in a small family firm yesterday, who is really struggling. He's had a kind of break in trust with the person he's working most closely with. And before we could do any problem solving, I felt it was important that he understand that not only did I hear the facts that he was telling me, but how disappointed and scared he was in losing this critical relationship in his work life. And kind of before we started to explore what he might do to reach out and regenerate this trust, I felt it was important to just let him know that not only did I hear what he was saying, but I could feel some of the feelings that I suspected he was feeling, and I didn't tell him what he was feeling. I said, so I imagine you feel, and then I added a few descriptors, and I said, am I close? Am I recreating some of the things that you're feeling as you encounter this guy and these circumstances? And you could kind of hear it in his face, in his voice rather, and see it in his face. He sort of took a breath and sort of said, yeah, I really am scared, and I really am disappointed, and I really do feel betrayed, and I really am, you know, kind of helpless and, you know, wanting to know if there's anything we can do here. And it was, you know, he hadn't said all those things. But because I took a moment and recreated not just what he had said, but kind of took a hunch and a guess at what he was feeling and said it back to him, framing it that way so I wasn't guessing in a vacuum, and I wasn't laying the fact that he might be feeling this way on him like a in sort of a, well, you must be feeling this way kind of thing, but sort of gently and graciously asking him if that's how he felt. He could kind of breathe and kind of recenter himself. And when he said, yeah, I said, well, let's think together how we kind of construct some conversations you will have with him to see what we can do to repair it. So, let's look at...
Tom, a question came in on the last slide. Maybe you can go back one.
Sure, I'm happy to.
How can I recreate a point of view that I don't agree with Won't that sound either phony or like I have no opposing judgment?
Well, that's a really good question. And so let me just dig in a little bit deeper to what I was saying, maybe use a different example. Husband and wife run a business together. They don't have the most calm relationship. And I've been seeing them to help them with an exit strategy, a succession plan for their business. And they tend to argue a lot. So what I do in cases like that is again, this is not a technique that is invisible. It's a technique that's visible. So it's recreating, asking one to say to the other, this is not only what I heard, but this is what I imagine you feel like. When they say it within that context, and they don't need a facilitator to do it, I mean, you can do it yourself. You can just say to someone, listen, I'm going to try to recreate what I think you may be feeling and what you're saying. I have a different point of view, but before we talk about the differences, let's see if we can at least agree that I can hear what you're saying, have some sense of what you must be feeling, and just check me out on this. So it's like suspending the conflict and saying some things and seeing if the person will kind of agree. Now, I've seen this work. I've also seen the person almost feel like he's being or she's being manipulated, and they have to say, well, is this a trick question? If I say yes, does that mean you're going to sort of, you know, say, well, therefore it's this? And you have to really convince them, because you believe it, that you're doing this to create a bond of connection, commonality, understanding, and appreciating without abridging or aborting your point of view.
That's huge. Thank you.
It takes some practice.
Yeah.
It takes some doing it. And when I say practice, it doesn't mean you're going to practice on a lot of people necessarily. It's when you do it, you can see in the other person's face if it landed. And if it didn't, you can say, you know, I don't think that landed as I meant it to, or I don't think you felt it in the way that I'm trying to get you to understand how I can imagine how you feel. So let me try it again. Or tell me what I might have missed. So you create what is often called a meta conversation. It's not the conversation that's in the foreground. It's now another conversation about, am I hearing you accurately? Am I recreating the feelings that you must have? Am I giving you a sense that I understand what you're feeling, even though I may disagree with you on the facts or on the outcome or on the strategy we're going to take up? So it creates a kind of pause in what is often a contentious or difficult conversation. I had one person, a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, tell me years ago, he said, talking about marriage, and he said, what's really important, and this is true in any relationship, is if you and your spouse are having an argument, notice that you won't be able to solve it until one person calms down. Very, very difficult to conclude argumentative conversation if both people are still very upset. And I, as Dana knows, he just helped my wife Marcia and I celebrate our 30th anniversary. And I can tell you we have practiced that principle for 30 years. Because it is, of course, true that we'll both be upset at the same time. It's natural. It's human. But if we bring our intentions, or I'll say I, if I can bring my intention to the fact that I want to get past this, then what I can do is figure out a way to get past it. And this is true in applying this kind of intentional, generous listening to dialogues where there's contentiousness and conflict and differences of opinion and often some pretty heated emotions.
Another question just came in. This is a huge topic that creates a lot of turmoil in organizations and is very costly. So this is a very cost-effective discussion today. The question has to do with any additional tricks to doing this with groups versus one-to-one.
Great question. So in a group, there is often diverse points of view. So I've done this in a group where I've actually used a whiteboard And I've said, okay, let's take the group that believes this and let's sort of just put on the board the point of view they have and their feelings and their observations. Okay, great. Now let's pause. And now let's do the same thing for this other subgroup that feels this way. And I remember once we were doing an onboarding of a new executive, and there were three different opinions about the nature of what this person needed to do to help the group move forward. And so we boarded all three of them. And I physically did this. We were in a conference room. And then I said, okay, let's all take a step back. And so I went to the back of the room as opposed to the front of the room, and I left the pen sitting where it was, and we had these three different points of view and different sets of emotions all kind of staring us in the face. And I said, great. Now, let's realize that all of these, each of these three, are interpretations. And what we want to do is we're going to bring this person in a minute who's going to be the head of this team. And let's figure out a way to brief him so that we're not causing him to have to choose which one of these is immediately accurate. But let's assume that there's some truth in all of them. And let's assume that there's some emotions that are valid in all of them. And we did that. So we sort of formulated a common presentation of the issues. And it was that that allowed us to then merge the differences. Not to find something that was what I would call suboptimal, but to present all of the data. As Dana knows, I've recently been hired as what they call an executive coach at Google. And that's a very challenging and exciting kind of environment. And in talking with one of the execs, we were talking about this form of listening. And you know, he was saying how challenging it is to talk to engineers who are passionate about their belief that X is right or Y is right. And to do that in a way that doesn't disturb the underlying values of trust and respect and regard. The slide that's up on the screen now talks a little bit about this type of listening. It's listening beyond your own point of view, particularly listening beyond your own judgments. And it really is a challenge to put yourself in another person's point of view where you don't really believe that point of view. So F. Scott Fitzgerald said this. He said, the mark of a truly intelligent person is to be able to hold two conflicting thoughts in your mind at the same time and still function. And I can't tell you where that quote is from in Fitzgerald's writing, but it is asserted to me that that is a Fitzgerald quote. But it's also, I think, a principle of human beings, that we are capable of doing that, but it takes a lot of willingness and intention. And obviously it's listening to the words and the emotions and then communicating to the other person what their reality is like. And to do that in a way that isn't manipulative, because you've said you're doing that in order to assert a kind of bond that transcends the immediate conflict. And I think for me that's what's so important in applying the principles of positive psychology to the workplace. It's letting other people know they're larger than their judgments and that you're larger than your judgments. That you have the capacity to learn and to see a point of view beyond your own preference or beyond your own belief. It's extremely freeing when you can say that to someone and then go back and say, now, are you willing to let me tell you my belief and my point of view, which is different than yours? And let's just put our points of view out there between us. And once we've done that, and you've been kind enough or generous enough to kind of listen to my point of view and my feelings, then let's see if we can find either a common ground or a next step or something that we agree on as a next step will give us more data. Because very often in the world of work, what we're missing is data. What we're missing is more information. What we're missing is asking another customer or asking a customer what really will satisfy them or serve them rather than have an argument about what the company's going to do. I was on a phone call this morning with a client as a customer that's used to getting things, software designed just for his business. And this is a company that is not in that, it's not their business model. They have some standard packages. And so we discovered how to approach this customer with the truth and to find a way that would work for that customer. Now, I can't tell you if it's going to work yet, but I can tell you that there's a very powerful sales team that's going to have very, very, I think, effective conversation with this customer team and see what they can work out, because they're going to really honor and support what the experience has been and not make the customer wrong. Very often, we tend to make people wrong in a dispute. I'm right, you're wrong. And we use facts to kind of overwhelm the other point of view. That does not work. What works is to honor the facts, honor the point of view, and honor your point of view if it's different. Excuse my dog in the background. She's having an emotional reaction to a FedEx delivery and is not listening generously. But hopefully that will go away and won't bother you. Hang on.
Another question just came in. Tom, what do you think prevents politicians from listening generously to solve the problems facing the country? That's a huge question, I realize.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, I have a lot of respect for politicians of all stripes, but I will say this, that when you and I hear politicians, they're giving us canned speeches, called a stump speech or called their position paper. You know, there was a recent article in the New York Times magazine section of Sunday about Haley Barbour and McCaffrey and Bill Clinton. And you read this, and you get a texture, an understanding of the texture of what these human beings are like besides their policy statements or their positional, you know, kind of iconic positions that they hold in life and in their parties. So I would say that what we're facing in the world of politics is it's really important to see, hear, listen, beyond what I would say is the sort of stump speech. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough to actually be in a dialogue with a politician, you can sometimes ask them or their staff. But we are being marketed to by politicians. That's the nature of the political process. It's not necessarily good news, but it is the world we're in. And hopefully, you know, through the debate and dialogue that we have with supporters of each of these, whatever the issues are, that we come to be able to use our democratic voice constructively. That's certainly what I'm trying to do. And I appreciate the question. I wish there was a better answer. I was just, as Dana said, in France, and I was there during the time that the election took place and the new president was inaugurated. So I had a lot of political conversations with French folks that I was working with. They're the same as we are. It's a very close election, and, you know, there are people who are happy or, you know, very excited, and people who are not so happy or not so excited, and everyone's kind of crossing their fingers and hoping. Let me talk about another level of listening generously. And it's a particularly important one, I think. And it's listening not just to different points of view, but listening to possibilities and opportunities for action that can arise from a genuine dialogue. So this is particularly useful in problem solving, not necessarily conflict resolution. But, you know, we got a problem. The quality in this particular assembly line sucks, or the customer is complaining about the call or help center. What do we do? And it's looking and listening and hearing people speak their mind. And as a leader, as a colleague, what you're doing is not just listening to your judgment about what they say, but using what they say as a jumping off point for considering other possibilities, looking for opportunities for action that you might not have seen. I challenge myself to do this if I'm at a listening to a person give a speech at a conference. which I do from time to time, or I'm, you know, on a panel and I'm listening to someone else speak, and I've been on a panel with the same person and I sort of know what they're going to say. So I challenge myself not to go unconscious and just assume that I know what they're going to say. I listen to what they say intentionally with fresh ears. And I listen to see if I can see a possibility that I didn't see before in what they're saying, or see more deeply into what they're suggesting. I do that every time I teach. Even though I may be teaching the same subject, I recreate the comments I'm going to make, as I did for today. I listen to myself for new possibilities. I see, for instance, I had never used this visual metaphor before, and I hope that worked for you. So there's listening generously as a mechanism to reduce a conflict and to create a shared platform for action when there's differences. But there's also listening generously beyond what the other person has said, and to be able to say back to them, you know, I just saw a possibility in what you said. I just saw something I hadn't seen before. I just saw, and I want to share it with you because you might see the same opportunity that we might look at something in a different way. So intentionally listening generously gives you the opportunity to create a dialogue, and it's a unique bond with another person. It's more than empathy. It's empathy with the addition of intellectual rigor. And it can genuinely and profoundly alter the experience of that relationship with a team or with individuals. Because whoever has the pen, as they say, has the power, but whoever has the pen also has the attention of the group, hopefully. So whether it's individually or as a group, when you consciously enter another's reality, which obviously makes EAR as an acronym, another mnemonic tool to remember this, you demonstrate a kind of intellectual and emotional flexibility. This is...
Tom?
Yes,
please. Another question just came in on that very topic. Can I use this approach with people who are upset or angry and help them calm down?
Yes, and you have a way to do that, which I found is to do it explicitly, transparently, intentionally. Say, listen, you're upset, and I understand that. So let me just take a moment and gather your thoughts. I don't want to gather my thoughts. I want to gather your thoughts and your feelings. And I want to, like a mirror, hold it up and make sure you know that I'm hearing you. I'm experiencing, you know, not what you're feeling, but I am sharing with you what I believe you're feeling. And I'd like you to let me know if I've got it roughly right. So, yes, that will help diffuse another person's emotional moment. And it's important when you do this not to assume that that's going to solve the problem, not even to assume that that's going to make the person feel better. What it will do is show them that you have the capacity to enter their reality. You have the capacity to recreate their emotional reality and their intellectual point of view. What you then do with that depends on the circumstance. If you're a neutral third party, then that begins to frame what you might do to bring those people together, because you may have to do it with the other group or individual as well. If you're the other person, it takes even more intention and commitment to put your own feelings aside and recreate the others. And then I find asking permission, or saying to the other person, now, what I'm going to do is, with your permission, I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking and feeling. And let's see if we can both take a beat and a breath, as they say in some circles, and just calmly, or with our emotions being somewhat more contained, can we begin to find either common ground or a way out of this conflict or dilemma? Because genuinely, I think most people want not just to win, but to be effective. I think genuinely most people don't want to beat up another person with facts, but they want to use the facts to find solutions. And unfortunately, losers can often be part of the wake or the result. And you want to find ways of not having individuals feel like they've lost, even if their point of view isn't what ultimately will, quote, carry the day, or their preferred decision isn't the one they wind up having to support, which happens in teams from time to time. At least you want to make sure that they don't feel ignored or marginalized for the way they feel or what they think. And you want to notice that all of us have very long memories. If human beings around us don't give our thoughts and our feelings some acknowledgement. So this form of intentionally being aware of our listening and transcending that automaticity and that narrative rut to something more intentional can be huge. But let us not leave today without acknowledging that the biggest step each of us can take to use listening in a more powerful way is just to be aware and alert to the ways we do listen, to the biases and points of view and the expectations that we have, that we bring to every moment of our awareness. By bringing our attention to what we are filtering and how we are filtering, gives us enormous capacity, when it counts, to make choices that will give us more impact constructively with ourselves and with each other. Because you can do this awareness training on yourself just in the way that you read emails, or that you listen to voicemails, or that you talk to yourself. That becoming aware of the automatic filtering process that we all use will give you enormous insight, and when it counts, hopefully give you some opportunity to make the choices that not necessarily are automatic, but that will serve you and your colleagues, and hopefully give you the kind of results that will bring satisfaction and success. I promised Dana that we would stay true to the time here. We've been talking for 50 minutes, not 40, Dana.
We're good.
So I want to acknowledge that where we are in the time frame, and maybe let you switch over so that people who want to have a voice-to-voice dialogue can.
Okay. Why don't we go to the last slide then. In just a few minutes, after we conclude this show and turn off the recording, we'll be opening the line up so you can talk directly with Tom. You'll see in your screen area that you can register for our upcoming August 23rd open line program, How to Turn Fear and Stress into Strengths. Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, we'll be sending a recording from today and a PowerPoint of today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization, with your team, or within your association or trade organization. Tom and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that were shared. If you'd like to contact Tom to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any of the ideas that were shared today, you'll see Tom's contact information on the screen. Again, we're going to open the line up just 1 second. I just want to close this down, and then we'll open it up. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in San Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track open line program. Have a great day. Hold the line. Let me turn this off, and we'll be right back.